of DUAC, and the current president of Kelly Heritage Country, Ms. Olga, is a founder of University and an international consultancy on climate resilience development, natural ecosystems, and heritage revival, and focuses on finance and clean energy of the city. She has had an extensive experience with UN and other international institutions across Asia. Co-founding an organization called IR Program, which has steered a community participatory example for the city of Gurgaon and has worked extensively with the Gurgaon Biodiversity Park. So I here start with talking about, like, when we got the concept of urban city, my first thought was that, you know, we are constantly talking about cities, its problems, but we are not addressing current issues with respect to the age-old concepts which our peers, which our urban peers have been talking about for generations. I would like to throw up on stage some few concepts which have been in the industry. I would just say that for centuries, urbanists and theories have been talking about the idea of city, what constitutes a city, what makes a good city. But with the current rapid urbanization and the challenges we are facing today, with the climate change, pollution, or the depletion of the natural resources and the ecosystem, how are we addressing these key concerns which have been identified by these urban theorists? Just put in across theories by Kevin Lynch as a Benjamin image of the city, on how he describes and in making a city imageable, what makes a city unique. Christopher Alexander on decoding the city, on talking about how to look at small aspects of the city which creates the wholeness of the city. What is a natural city? What is an artificial city? Jane Jacobs on how communities are built in action and how we can think about a collaborative city planning. What is a piecemeal approach? Like, how do we look at small aspects of the city and work towards making our heritage cities more dynamic? And in the end, about how are we looking at conurbation of the city? When we look at Patrick Edison's, how are we looking at the urban sprawl with respect to today's, let's say, example of Delhi NCR? And how are we addressing the issues of urban conurbation? So I would like to ask Ms. Olga to start the presentation with her ideas on what makes our city unique and local. How can we address a local, contextually tailored city?
Okay, may I have my slides, please? Maybe more than defining what makes unique cities, I'd like to give a few ideas on why unique cities are extremely important today. So, I'm connecting to impact areas. So, I'm connecting a little bit to what you know as part of this. As per Kevin Leach, identity in an urban context is the extent to which a person can recognize or recall a place as being distinct from other places. So, interestingly, last month I was in Bombay and I presented these three pictures to Bombay people. And I asked them which city was which. These are basically three major Asian cities, and the one on your left is Bombay. So about 200 people, most of them were from Bombay, only one very timidly said Bombay visit. The others were thinking it's New York, it's Jakarta. So this to me was quite revealing. It showed that today there is a clear identity crisis in Asian cities. All cities pretty much look alike. So this is Bangkok and this is Manila, but no one would be able to figure this out. And what is important is that consequences of building these uniform cities go way beyond what we think. And I'll touch upon three major points. One is building uniform compromises climate resilience. India, for example, is the sixth most vulnerable nation to climate change in the world. And Indonesia, Jakarta is part of Indonesia, is one of the 10 most vulnerable countries. So how do we build? In Jakarta, this is a city near the coast, and it's a city with a tropical monsoon climate. So by now, 97% of the city have been covered by concrete and asphalt. And in addition to this, the different natural ecosystems have been approached upon by built environment. So, a question I would have for us is how possibly a city with 11 million people can survive with a monsoon where the water has nowhere to go? In addition to this, we build some high rises here and there, so about 40% of the Jakarta city are now under the sea level rise, and the city is sinking every year. And this is not a natural but a man-made disaster. Because the way we built the city, we haven't adapted to the local context. And we face very severe consequences. This was climate adaptation. Now climate mitigation. We all talk about reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And in particular, we look at buildings and we say, oh, this is a zero consumption, zero energy consumption building, because the building is able to produce its own energy. But there is a huge hidden elephant in the room, which is what we call embodied energy, which we very rarely look at. So basically all the different materials with which we build conventionally have a tremendous environmental consequence. So as for the International Energy Agency, manufacturing materials that we all love here, such as cement, steel, glass, aluminium, only the manufacturing of them costs us 25% of global energy demand and 20% of global CO2 emissions. So this means unless we start looking at alternative materials, localizing the way we build, the planet is going to warm up tremendously. Second important thing of consequence of building uniform. Building uniform severely affects our physical and mental health. So one example of mental health, Colin Eller conducted a kind of experiment. Basically, he let people walk around some kind of boring facade without any activity on the facade. Typical buildings we face in Asian cities. And then he made them walk near heritage buildings with activities on the facade, open facade, etc. And they documented how people felt. So there was a tremendous difference in how people would perceive the built environment. So often when we build, we think about our digital needs and we kind of disregard the fact of how we're going to feel in the urban environment. And this feeling precisely is what is constituting our well-being, and that needs to be much more paid attention to. And finally, to continue on well-being, building uniform now compromises economic competitiveness. And why is it so? Because we are in an age of a digital revolution. So less and less qualified workforce needs to go and settle in a city which doesn't provide you good quality of life. And I'm sure you are familiar with different urbanization projections that by 2050 the cities will grow by this much. Some people are questioning these projections. Because more and more people actually want to live in smaller cities that provide good quality of life, sunset. So unless the city cares about and the quality of life it provides, it is likely also to become completely independent. Give a quick example. India altogether receives less international visits, less tourists, than the small country of Singapore, only 6 million people. Why so? Because in Singapore, every building is thought of as a part of an integrated urban fabric. It is well connected in the way it looks and the way it feels. It's connected to greenery. It's an integrated system, and people want to visit this. So some lessons to draw from that. And to conclude, I recently was in Sao Paulo for an event, and that was quite revealing to me. So this is a complete urban jungle with nearly no greenery, tall high-rises, one next to another. You know, Latin America urbanized 50 years before Asia started urbanizing. So we in Asia should wonder, is this the future we want for Asian cities? Is this how we want to see them? We already have examples of all these decisions we are taking today, how it will go and look like. So we should draw consequences from that. And finally, just to leave you on a brief note, imagine if every city in which you live, in which you go, has a personality, a unique personality. Imagine how our life would change by just going and discovering so many new places versus just, you know, exiting the airport and seeing the same uniform buildings that you've seen. So because of the shortness of time, I'm not providing solutions, but we do work on solutions. We are in fact putting up an international group of experts looking into how to build alternatively, meeting the needs of affordability of building fast, but yet building differently from what I showed earlier. You're welcome to join and brainstorm with us. And I believe each of us can bring something. Be it a small piece where whichever level we are at, whichever part of the built environment we are working on, I believe all of us can make a difference once we understand how important it is.
Thanks, Olga. Olga has set the stage for us to talk about the image of Sao Paulo. I think it's very important for us to look at how we are connecting the public domain with our built environment. And on that, I would like to invite Mr. Ravi Mukherjee to talk on the importance of pedestrianization of vehicle-centric cities.
Because that is really something that I have been, it's very close to my heart, and I think it's something that it's a crying need of our cities today, and it's something that we all need to address, no matter which city we are in, at least in Asia or India. Lots and lots of encroachments, and these are the three major aspects that really occupy our public domain. As a result, you have to be really young, agile, and fit to be able to negotiate our public domain today. There is really no space for the old, or the children, or the differently abled people, because how do you expect them to negotiate a space like this? Our public domain is, this is a typical view of our public domain throughout our country today. Today when I go into a city, what I dream is something like this, where I can walk, it's a lovely pedestrian experience, but what I get is all this. The quality of any city today is experience, it is always judged by the experience of the pedestrian. And when the pedestrian experience is a good one, as Olga was saying, it's a completely integrated environment. You have it's a very conducive, very inviting place, and people would like to walk, people would like to be in the public domain, because the difference between the public domain and the private domain is seamless. You seamlessly move from one to another without experiencing a quantum change the way we find in our environments today. So, what do we have? We have the public domain and then we have a private domain. Now, there are certain things that we need to do. How do we bring the pedestrian back? So this is an exercise that we have been sort of struggling with as a part of the Urban Arts Commission. And we have been brainstorming with a whole lot of people, a whole team of people. And one of the solutions that we felt, because every city will have its own unique solutions. Every situation in every city will have again unique solutions. One of the solutions that we have looked at for Delhi is that Delhi is still a very green city. It still has a large green cover. But unfortunately, this green cover is really, really closed away from our roads. Because while the pedestrian jostles with the traffic, our green areas are cordoned off with boundary walls. So we said, can we break down these walls and create alternate routes for our pedestrians through these beautiful greens, so that they don't remain places for a morning walk, but they remain places for a pedestrian to go from one area to another. It becomes a place to go to a destination. So we took up some of the greens of South Delhi. We took up the Jahanpana Forest, the Panchir Forest, the Tughlakabad Fort, and we actually figured that you could create an 8-10 kilometer long trail which would take you from one forest to another, or what we would call one fort to another fort, from Tughlakabad Fort to Siri Fort. So these are the kind of things with a little design intervention. You could create lovely walkways, lovely, you know, pedestrian plazas that connect these parks to the urban tissue. Instead of having closed walls, we open up and give it an identity of face. Let's start talking about our old city, Shahjahanabad. It's a piece of heritage that we have. But what have you done to this heritage? It's again besotted with, I would say, lawlessness, because there is again encroachment, there is complete lack of systems, which has ruined this beautiful old city. So we said, let's look at some of these very busy different scales of streets, and let's see what we can do with minimal design intervention and see what we can create. So we took the street that is sort of going towards Jama Masjid, and again, you know, we identified the problems. We said we can't touch the private property because that's not something which really falls within our purview. So we just took the facade, we just took the public domain as it was, and we just tried to clean it up by actually defining our public domain, define the street section, give a proper place for pedestrians, try and restrict traffic in many areas, clean up the facade by actually putting a system in terms of colors, in terms of facade elements. So one is not actually changing anything or destroying somebody's private property, but one is just enhancing it. And I feel that down the line, if you are part of, if you own a piece of heritage, you have to be able to enforce laws, and you have to be able to live within that law because you have a piece of heritage. So by doing a little bit of intervention, you really create a lovely place for a pedestrian to walk across. It becomes an inviting place and an inclusive place for pedestrians. Again, we take up another smaller street here, which is more pedestrian, and then if you see what we can do. The same street actually becomes a wonderful experience with good signages, good lighting, facade, some sort of uniformity that you bring in, and it makes a world of a difference. You take a small street in Kinari Bazaar and you don't change anything, because there are certain characters which are really very nice. There is a vibrancy. You don't want to take that away. But how do you make a pedestrian comfortable? without jostling, without actually banging into things. You find a, you have a system of wayfinding, which is what is most important in these old cities. This is a small street in Puchapathiram, which is a wonderful small residential street. And it has some really nice old facades. But because of lack of systems, there are wires, there are cables, and all you have to do is clean up the services, clean up the plumbing, get in the lighting, do a nice system of signages, and restore the facades. That's all it takes, and look what a difference it can create. A little courtyard in the old city. This is how it has become a godown the way it is today. But instead of that, with a little intervention, with a little sort of restoring of the old sort of arts and crafts, you can actually make it into a wonderful place where you want to go to rather than a place you want to run away from. So these are the various things you can do to enhance the pedestrian experience, to bring the pedestrian back. It's an attempt to bring people like you and me back into the old city. We don't go there anymore. But why should we? Why are we obliterating a piece of our heritage, which is right there? So this is an attempt to bring, make it very inclusive, bring the rest of Delhi into the old city and revive the heritage that it has. Let's look at Connaught Place. It's a lovely piece of heritage again, such as Delhi. And look what it has become today. It is a system of cars and parking and more cars and more parking. And there is no place for pedestrians. So Connaught Place was meant to be a colonnade, a place where people walked. In fact, as a child, I used to walk from my house, which was on Janapath, near Claridge's. I used to actually walk to Connaught Place and walk around the place having a little bit of, you know, ice cream or a little bit of kheera tomato or whatever, and then walk back home. And this was like an outing that we used to have. But today, it's a sort of a thing of the past. You can't even dream of doing all that because you get knocked out by some car or the other. And what we want to do is try and see, can we bring the pedestrian back into this beautiful old precinct? So we said, what if we actually pedestrianize the inner circle? We restrict the parking to a very, very disincentivized parking on these vertical roads, because it's a parking which will be so expensive that it is only for emergency vehicles or somebody who sort of needs assistance. Otherwise, it needs to be something which is prohibitively expensive to park. And then you revive the multi-level car parks around so that you create a system of parking. You cannot wish the cars away, but you have to park, you have to manage them. You have to provide for them around. And then try and create lovely gardens where the cars are today and create a lovely pedestrian experience over here. And this is how you would feel instead of the car standing right at the doorstep. And this is how you would feel. And this is a little bit of example of Sabarmati, which is how it used to be in the olden days. And look what it is today. This is how it used to be. And look, the beautiful urban plazas that have been created. And it is a place for pedestrians, cyclists, and morning walkers. It's a very, very vibrant space today. Thank you. Thank you so much.
So now we showed some very interesting examples of how we need to pay attention to small components of the city to look at it as a whole. And giving your examples of examples of how city and public domain can actually help revitalize our city. But it leads me, I remember when the Connaught Place discussion was going on, the first people to oppose the pedestrianization were the shop owners and the trainers themselves. Which brings us to the aspect of revitalization with a lens of historic preservation, looking at the public domain, but asking the question about awareness and also finance, as to how we can create an awareness and bring in the finance and create a model of self-regeneration with the better awareness. On that invite Ms. Radhika to talk about her experience of working with heritage cities and how, like we were just generally chatting before the session, and she was telling me how we can look at examples of adaptive reuse, create more awareness of heritage structures, and bring in a more participatory way of looking at heritage to a different level.
Conservation is much of a would have been an asset and should be utilized, and the examples that Ma'am gave sound so good, but I have experienced in Chandigarh and Jaisalmer, which are 1,000 years apart, both planned areas. Problem is one, the public, all the people who are occupying that space. Some sort of a lack of awareness, or I don't know what it is, they just don't want to consume. And I think that remains for conservationists the largest challenge, is how do you really get the people who are going to use the space, and we as professors, how can we convince them? I think that is the largest challenge. I don't know whether everyone agrees with that, but I see that everywhere in every city, Ahmedabad, Chandigarh, Jaisalmer, and this is, I think it's a minor issue, but a huge challenge for professionals, especially conservation. Like I personally struggle with these issues. So, Chandigarh, like the center of the Connaught Place, we are working on the whole revitalization of Sector 17, which the plan to be, was supposed to be the heart of the city. And the good part about it is that it is completely controlled by architectural, what we call architectural control, so which is what the modern architecture is. So a lot of buildings with significance, or the whole place is a grade 1, sector 7, the whole of it is sector 17, grade 1. And so you need to preserve, apparently, sector 17, which already has a lot of guidelines given by Gautam himself, saying it should be a pedestrian paradise. And so there are many things that are laid out, but still we have challenges of defining between the pedestrians.
There's a need for us to relook at those architectural
questions. I don't think we need to, we can't really look at architecture, it's already, it's already stated. What we need to understand as professionals and people people who are using the building is to reinstate the original use. Because culturally also we have changed as people and society, and maybe the need is changed. Even from 50 years we have changed. From independence, post-independence we have changed. So we need to adaptively review most of these spaces, and that's where design comes into a major feature, where I feel that in morning session we're talking about design, and I think inspiration from the same building that you're working on is also a very important aspect of design. And I think so that's how the redevelopment and reinstating the original tools into that to use, along with the services that are required for the mobility and living. I think that's what I would like to
really try to and connecting to that same conversation of bringing in the awareness, we have Swanju with us, who is the co-founder of IIM Gurgaon, who has actively encouraged this idea of community-driven participation looking at urban
Thanks, Neetu. Thanks, services reporter and Madhu and Rajita for inviting me here. I'm always very excited to talk about the city because I feel very passionately about cities. And I feel that each of us have to really play a role in ensuring better quality of life in cities and making a difference in the communities that we live in. I want to share with you actually today a story of an NGO called IIM Gurgaon that I co-founded 10 years ago. And what was discussed earlier about pedestrianization, uniqueness in cities, and collaborative action, awakening citizens and awareness, all of that really comes together in this story. It's actually something that I feel very grateful to have been part of. And so the presentation is titled actually Ecology, Collaborative City Design and Civic Action. And what we actually did with Bangalore Now, it started as a platform to bring together all the various stakeholders in the city who wish to make a change in the city. There was a group of us, three of us, Latika, Ambika, and I, three women actually, who had lived in the city for about almost 11, 12 years, and we all felt that in those 12 years, the city had somehow become something very different than what it was when we actually moved in. And we were really not comfortable with what had happened, and we really wanted to make a difference. So I think what we realized was we needed to engage with other citizens, with corporates, with the government, and see what was possible. We also believed in building up collaborative partnerships between the government, citizens, and us coming in as an NGO with technical expertise. And one of the projects that we've actually been involved with for the last 10 years has been the Aravali Biodiversity Park, which is a 385-acre park in the city, which we've actually revived the original Aravali forest there. When we actually started the project, it was a denuded mining site. There's not, you know, like there were very few trees, and they were all the 1900 trees, which were not actually ecological, and just dust and rock, and actually some pictures we saw in a short film. And the second project that we've actually done is a sustainable mobility corridor. And what's interesting is that after the biodiversity park, the government actually came to us to implement the second project. It belonged to the forest department, and after having seen the work that we did at the biodiversity park, they reached out to us and asked us to help them develop this. It's a 5-kilometer pedestrian corridor, which is the only public space apart from the metro, which is also designed for the visually impaired. And again, we followed the same practices and the same team implemented whatever learning that we had seen at the biodiversity park. Just to share, like the early project was that we actually got engagements at runs, at we had carry-on bag campaigns to sensitize people to waste, and the fact that, you know, you shouldn't be bringing any bags home, it's not just plastic. You shouldn't actually be bringing the paper or crop bags home either. If you carry on bag, you reduce what you bring into your home. Rajuri, which was an attempt at pedestrianizing a large series of roads within the city, and kind of reclaiming that public space for pedestrians and cyclists. This began in November 2013 and became a huge success actually. So it really was like everybody was out on the street, there was Zumba, and it was a very interesting way, something that you don't expect to see in any Indian city anywhere. So it was really quite a game changer in that sense. We've also been running a series of nature walks within the Aravali, largely in the biodiversity park, but also in Mangal Bani and other areas. Which is to sensitize people to the beauty of the native Aravali world. Now, most of us look at landscape as decorative species which don't belong to the ecology of place. But what we've done at the biodiversity park and what we highly recommend to everybody planting even a garden is to select native Aravali species, because they're actually, over the years, they've adapted to the climate and the landscape and the soil. They require less water. They support a good ecology of butterflies, birds, animals, which you've seen the film. And so it's really amazing to see that, I mean, the biggest learning for the biodiversity work for us was that in 5 years of planting the right kinds of trees, the whole ecosystem turned around. You could see the birds. We have like 185 species of birds in the Aravali biodiversity park today. Many butterfly species, many other animals as well. We also did a neighborhood trees campaign to sensitize people to actually trees within their own communities. This is the Million Trees Program project, which created the biodiversity park. And this is really what we were trying to do with the park, which is the idea of urban wilds and the idea that all cities today have the potential to reclaim denuded green spaces and convert them into precincts, mobility corridors, and actually nurturing spaces in the city, which we see very little of anymore. And it's also spaces that are open to all, which is really important for cities. Because we tend to live in a world where now everything is defined by, you know, economic, where you are economically, and that's really not a very fair thing for a lot of the other people in the city. This is an image of the park, I think, about 3 years ago. And so it's basically now like a successful case study of how you can rehabilitate denuded land through civic citizens' intervention. And all of this was done through a completely participatory process. So we had This is a watercolor image about a park in Brooklyn, like eventually. And this shows you the kind of dual lever. We brought together communities, corporates, over 70 corporates have come together to donate to the park. So the model was a PPP model where the funds came into corporates, the land belonged to the NCG, and citizens came into plants and we helped the base in the water plant. This is the second project I mentioned, which is the pedestrian mobility corridor. So, can we just have that? I'd like to leave you with this last part, and we just share it with you.
Where we can all come together and think of a city from a larger perspective.
So let's try to understand what the city is like. And we did this 2-year work, so I would not be able to represent it now. But maybe in 5 minutes, I'll just give you a glimpse of our understanding of Delhi, because I've spent all of my life here. Welcome everyone to Delhi. Delhi is right now the most polluted city in the world, and this is what we are giving to our next generation. It's supposed to be the asthma capital, and I've experienced it. My younger child, you know, got a lot of health issues, so I have to shift him from Delhi to Dharamshala, and this is a change that we see in 6 months. So he's absolutely pale and healthy, and you would see that the recordings that we see on the meters is 500, 600 in Delhi, and you go to Dharamshala, part of India, the recordings are 5 and 6, much better than even cities in Europe. So that was a big, big experiential change for us to understand that things can happen in the country, provided how we can do it. So I just don't understand. I go for a morning walk and I see that people, one person, every one person comes in an SUV, a 500 kg vehicle, and a person of 60 or 670 kg. So how can we be sustainable? And how can we think of a walk or a cycle track where our primary way of commuting is car? So we are driven so much by the West that we just forget, you know, our basic rules. And, you know, I think Sonali has touched a great point that we need to think about our heritage. And heritage has so much to offer, but not utilizing it. Also, I just trying to channelize it, what has been done in the West. So these are also very interesting pictures. So, you know, Ganga and Yamuna, 10 most polluted rivers in the world. So again, another achievement for us. So these are the bridges and the statues. We always see them. So just see how they are now, monuments, great monuments without any water. So they don't serve any purpose. So how can we preserve them as a piece of heritage? You know, this is also beyond the understanding. And this is a Bhattal Lake. If anyone was there in Delhi 15 years back, so you know, this used to be full of water and you know, a lot of birds and everything, but now this is what it is. And in terms of air pollution, you go to a cinema hall and you would see that there is a sign that don't smoke. Or passive smoking kills. But you know, we are in a situation where 80 people every day are dying by pollution of air. But we just don't understand, because it's just inculcated in ourselves that this is what our life is all about. And in terms of waste management, we are again, you know, absolutely number one. And in terms of greens, I was surprised that we did a study that we have lost 60% in terms of green in Delhi. We are green, but we see that green across our roads. But if you go to the greens, that is the greens that were part of the forest land, you know, all those are gone. And I also appreciate your point. My farm is very near to the portion that you were showing me, and we used to go for a walk inside. And believe me, what you see inside are small trees, and there is no temperature drop. And if you go to our Sakesh Sports Complex, in a strip of 10 meters with, you know, big trees, there is a temperature drop of 8 degrees. So how we can revive them? You know, these can't be small eager trees that you can call. We can't call the forest. We need to change our thinking. So again, you know, this is our social behavior. So in terms of education system also, there has to be a change. And just looking on the positive side, this has happened in other parts of the world, but we are just 100 years back, not more. So if you see, we did case examples of London, Amsterdam, and even some of the parts of Jaipur, that is compiled in one of the books that we did. But here you would understand that in 1850s, London was also the most polluted city in the world. Thames was very, very similar to Yamuna, but they revived it. And they changed it, now it is one of the most cleanest. At the same time, they created this idea of just not walks, but they created this idea that cars and bicycles can coexist.
बिलीव मी 20 इयर्स पहले जब मैं स्कूल जाता था तो जितनी भी लेबर है ऑल ऑफ देम यूज्ड टू गो ऑन साइकिल. अगर आज आपका बच्चा दिल्ली में साइकिल चलाना चाहे तो इट विल बी टेरिबल. आई राइड इट वंस इन 10th. आई वाज यू नो गोइंग टू फॉर माय ट्यूशंस ऑन साइकिल एंड देयर वाज अ बस व्हिच वाज जस्ट रैंपिंग मी. सो देयर वाज दिस लेडी हु केम एंड शी शाउटेड एंड येल्ड एट द बस ड्राइवर टू स्टॉप द बस. अदरवाइज इट्स नॉट सेफ फॉर अस टू बाइसाइकिल. वेयर कम टू बाइसाइकिल. सो दिस इज अ ट्रांसफॉर्मेशन सेट. Till today, London is trying to create that idea of making it more recyclable and also sustainable. So cities have to change with time. So even London, even the cleaners, they are still trying to propose more walking and cycle tracks. And where are we? We are adding 2 lakh cars per year in Delhi. So in terms of walkability, I think you know this is already we have much in abundance in Chandni Chowk. But how do we create an interface between Chandni Chowk and the Lakhin city? So that transition has to come. So cyclable, we are already adding 30% cycles. We have reduced massively. We can't cycle anywhere in Delhi. But you know one more good thing that has happened in Delhi, which is a great learning experience for me, is the coming of the metro. So believe me, जब पहला मेट्रो स्टेशन सीलमपुर में खुला था सब लोग सोच रहे थे कि ये स्टेशन फंक्शन कैसे करेगा. That's the most dirtiest part in the country and you would not believe it. Still if you go to सीलमपुर and if you go to साकेत the metro stations are alive. So change is possible. It is not like you know we can't change, but there has to be a mechanism of how we change. So Amsterdam, myself, I've cycled there and I wish there is recreate this possibility in Delhi that I can come to a conference by cycling. So I think that is the transition that we are looking at. Luckily we got an opportunity. This is the only city owned by a private person in the country. Jamshedpur is a 64 square kilometer country city. So there we created this whole idea of a 50-year master plan, where you can think of coming from one neighborhood to another neighborhood through green spaces, and there can be a possibility. Aap ek green se dusre green mein jab jaoge, you don't have to cross the road, because you know these cities are not for the road, they are for us. So ye kaise arrival hoga? And absolutely also about the waterfront. So I would just like to end here. So I think it is for us how we can create a leisurable and a more comfortable experience for the people for which the cities are being designed. So I think you know, for that maybe we can have further discussion later. But the idea is we have to think beyond architecture. We have to think beyond a project on the ground. We have to think and give a vision to our country and to our cities. Thank you.
A very interesting question of how do we make our city livable. We have touched upon the individual topics of creating community participation, making the streets more pedestrian friendly, making the streets more cyclist friendly, looking at heritage as an important asset of the city. But how do we connect the dots? The question today is how are we going to bring in the model of finance. In your case, you talked about incorporating the corporate sector in bringing in the change, which I think is a good example, because here we are struggling. As a member of FMROP, you are probably aware of the fact that working on ideas and solutions in a studio and then putting it across to the civic authorities and getting them implemented, where will the money come from? How are you making sure that our ideas are actually trickled down to the system and made as regularizations or standards for the city to follow? I would just ask Ms. Sonali to put some light on that aspect.
One thing that any project that you take, it needs to be a project that actually makes money for the people. So it's only money that talks. So once an economic model is a model which generates income and generates revenue, it is one of the new work. That is, you know, number one. And number two, you have to put in very strict laws with zero tolerance. I mean, the same people
So just to add on this point on regulation, I want to make a parallel with the energy sector. So in the energy sector, when we look at all these oil and gas companies, 20, 30 years back, we were not even thinking that it's possible to shift to renewable energy and you know, different ways of functioning, because the lobby was so strong. Now, I've been in the clean energy sector as well, so now I see all these big companies, they have sales researching on renewable energy, they think how they're going to convert. So the same, if governments take awareness that the way we are building is not sustainable, needs to change, the same can be mainstreamed in big real estate companies. And they will start looking at alternative ways for using cement, for using glass. It will pick up, but this kind of push is really needed.
Just to come back to your question about finance, because I think you were asking. You know, there's no dearth of money in what these have. The challenge is the process of implementation. Unfortunately, because they have a process which is okay, which is also oriented towards the lowest reserve, and therefore they have no control over the quality, or no, and typically also almost no technical expertise or knowledge about best practices even in the world. So I think our biggest challenge and the third problem is that we have an administrative structure where a person with a vision, like a commissioner, is rotated every 3 to 4 months. And the people who actually are the prominent people are people who are there only to make money. This is the reality of how our cities are administered. So our problems are very deeply rooted in terms of shifting that, the way that the system is, you know. Who is going to shift the system of people who actually buy a position in the commission so that they can then make money off it, right? So I think the only way to subvert this is actually to completely exclude the authorities from the finance of the project at all, which is what we did. So essentially you bring corporate money in, and corporate money does not trust the government, but they will trust an NGO because the NGO is taking accountability for delivering the project. And NCG supports it with the land. And then so it's a win-win game. You know, everybody is playing a role that is uniquely tailored to their own skills. And you actually get to completely get away from this tendering process, which is what kills all public work in our country.
Would you like to add to the tendering process and our current system of?
I think tendering, architects should learn tendering rather than design. Unfortunately, this is something that I was never taught in school and college. But in my practice, I think tendering is the most important thing that one should know. So, and you know, another unfortunate or you know, whatever, the thing is that the administrative control is in the hands of the engineers. So architecture fraternity is very limited and our voices are very limited. So we need to find, you know, a couple of solutions. One is to be friends with the engineers, which I think is very, very difficult for us. Because we have been always taught that, you know, engineers and architects are not friends. And, you know, even our engineers think like that. But there is one good thing that architects know, which engineers probably somehow they don't know this, is that, you know, we know how to read the drawings. And if you do some couple of projects, you would learn to understand the BOQ and the tendering process. So then you learn the tendering and BOQ, but they don't understand the drawings.
I think we have all agreed on the aspect of how to give importance to the public domain, the heritage and can we talk a little bit about smart cities? Because I think that's one topic which we forgot to touch upon. Because as we are talking about urban cities, there is a whole lot of conversation and a lot of government money and our tax money is going into development of these several smart cities, the smart city mission that's been going on. How many, out of our general experience, how many of these smart cities are actually talking about these important parallels that we have shared today on the panel, talking about heritage, pedestrianization, uniqueness of the city, how to bring in the community participation.
So I just like to continue the conversation where he was. I think the biggest, but the only way that they're going to actually get smart cities, whatever that means, is to have a very strong multidisciplinary approach to thinking about it. Yeah. So we have to move away from the idea of only urban designers and architects and engineers in planning, or be involved citizen is as important. Cyclist, daily wage worker is as important. And ecologist is equally important. And I think the reason that our cities are the way they are is that we are at a very flawed model for what the city is. The second thing is that actually we have to move away from the idea of centralized control in Sharjah. It is something which is, if you look at the speed and scale at which our cities are growing, there are 1,000 new buildings coming daily every day, of which 30% are migrants. There is no way that you can ever hope to keep pace with that scale. The only way you can hope to do that is by having a cellular process. I mean, like basically, you had an example of just Alexander, a city is not a tree, a city is a semi-lattice. So if you look at a semi-lattice, you can distribute, you just look at lattices and interstices, you look at it as a model. And if you run it exactly that way, or administer it that way, that's the only way that you can have any kind of control and actually administer a city effectively.
That's a very interesting point that you said, we need to bring in more people of all aspects of our city. And that, I mean, we still haven't touched upon smart city yet, but that also brings in the question of, you know, people like us sitting in the conference rooms and talking about the cities. How are we making sure that our Kamalibai or the people who are living next to us, like in Mr. Rajesh's presentation, you could see that there is a divide between our city dwellers. How are we making sure that a slum dweller or our support system, our backbone of our city, is actually being accounted for? Like, I had the opportunity on working on some slum development projects with the Delhi Development Authority. Very nascent projects in 2008 and 9, and all the projects were politically driven. They all had a political agenda to them, and I'm not sure I to talk about it openly because none of the projects took off are right after the election. How are we actually making sure in making our city smart and more resilient? How are we making sure that we are making all the realms of our city participate in this whole planning of smart cities or future cities?
I can just add a very quick thing, because I'm just aware of one project which I feel is really going the distance. It's the Bhubaneswar smart city project, and as Sonali pointed out, it needs a very strong administrative control. So here, luckily, what happened is there is one administrator for all the projects, so it's a centralized control. And they have created the PMU, a centralized PMU, that's a consultant. And they have a full consultant attached to the government authority. So what is happening is consultant is creating an ecosystem of how the urban design of the city would upgrade. And the administrative control is giving it, I would say, endorsement on daily basis. So they are progressing so quickly, and they are trying to achieve, you know, the things that all of us have talked about. They have created natural walks, they have created swales, they have got the water back in the city, they have created advertisement which is uniform for all the marketing throughout the different administrations. So they are trying to portray what their city should be in the next 5 years. So that is very interesting case example. And another case example which is very interesting is the Tata Venture, for example, where the owner is so very, very methodical, and he wants to understand in the next 50 years what his citizens should have in that place of the city which he's controlling. So those are two very good examples, but yes, it has a very top-down approach to it.
Okay. I think Olga in her presentation talked about a comparison between Singapore and India. I mean, the figures are really staggering as to how many tourists Singapore, being such a small country, like